For years, Hazel Vidler sent birthday and Christmas cards without fail. Then, around 1979 or 1980, the cards stopped, and so did every reliable trace of her. Welcome to Crime Path Podcast. Every case leaves a trail. In each episode, we follow that trail through the available record, the evidence, the testimony, the timelines, and the gaps that remain. We stay with what can be sourced. Where something is alleged, disputed, or unclear, we will say so. Let's begin. For years, Christopher Draper received cards from his mother. Birthday cards. Christmas cards. He knew they were from her because he recognized her handwriting. According to the coronial findings, Hazel was almost obsessive about keeping cards on hand, ready to send. Then, around 1979 or 1980, the cards stopped. Christopher was an adult by then. He had his own life. But the cards were consistent. They were a pattern. And when a pattern like that ends without explanation, it can become the first visible edge of something much larger. For decades, no one knew where Hazel was. Her husband, Edward Vidler, later gave police and family members different accounts of the last time he said he saw her. In one version, he drove her into Taree to catch a bus. In another, she ran away near Victoria Street. In another, she may have gone to Sydney by train. Edward said he reported Hazel missing. But when Christopher went to police in July 2021 to find out what records existed, he was told there was no record of a missing person report being made about his mother. By then, more than 40 years had passed. On the 9th of February 2026, at the coroner's court in Forster, Magistrate Towney found that Hazel Vidler was deceased, and that she died sometime in or after 1979. But the coroner could not determine where Hazel died, could not determine the cause and manner of death. The coroner also found that Edward's various accounts could not be relied upon. She recorded significant suspicions about any role Edward may have played in Hazel's disappearance or death. But she was not able to make a positive finding that Edward ended Hazel's life. That is the careful legal line in this case. There is suspicion, there are contradictions, but there is no body, no cause of death, and no finding that any person killed her. This is episode 2, The Woman Who Stopped Sending Cards. Hazel Claire Knight was born on October 23, 1922. Across her life, she was known by several names, including Claire, Carson, Draper, Ritzau, and Vidler. For clarity, the coroner referred to her as Hazel, and this episode will do the same. The records give only fragments of Hazel's life, but those fragments matter. She married Christopher's father in 1941, and in June of that year gave birth to her only child, Christopher. Later, under the stage name Claire Carson, she worked as a dancer and choreographer in King's Cross. She also worked as an advertising executive. People who knew her remembered an independent, fashionable woman. Christopher remembered his mother as someone who seemed to know exactly what to wear. The coroner recorded that she loved horse riding, dancing, and going to nightclubs, until arthritis limited those hobbies. These details do not solve the case, but they keep Hazel from becoming only a missing person file. In the early 1960s, Hazel is believed to have met Edward James Vidler while she was living above Leonie's dress shop in Burwood, New South Wales. They married on the 4th of September 1964. Hazel was 41, Edward was 21. By the 1970s, land records show Hazel and Edward owned several properties together. The most important for this case was a Putter Road property at Upper Lansdowne, held between August 1977 and June 1983. Edward later referred to the Putter Road property as being in Taree, the nearest major town to Upper Lansdowne. The land was 100 acres. He said he put a shed on the property, concreted the floors, and that he and Hazel lived there. The property records become important because by approximately 1979, there is no known reliable evidence of Hazel's whereabouts. On the 21st of January, 1981, Edward's mother lodged a caveat over the Putter Road property. It listed Edward and Claire Vidler as the registered proprietors. Beside Claire's address, the caveat stated that her whereabouts were unknown. That was more than 1 year after the period when Christopher remembered the cards stopping. The last known movements of Hazel Vidler are difficult to state with confidence because, according to the coroner, the accounts all come from the same person, Edward. In a police interview in 2022, Edward said that about a month before Hazel disappeared, she told him she did not want to live in Taree anymore. Edward said that, in his mind, the relationship had ended. He said they discussed selling the property if Hazel did not want it. He said he would let her know through Christopher's father. Edward said that on the day Hazel disappeared, he drove her into Taree in his green Morris Nomad so she could catch a bus. He said she did not tell him where she was going and did not speak to him during the drive. She had a small overnight bag with her, but nothing else. According to Edward, he dropped Hazel near the bus stop because there was no parking. He said it took him about 10 minutes to find a parking spot. When he returned, the bus was gone, and so was Hazel. He said that was the last time. Edward said he went home, stayed by the phone, and contacted people who knew Hazel, but no one had heard from her. He told police he went to Taree Police Station within a day or two to report Hazel missing. He said police told him they could not list her as a missing person at that time, and to come back if she did not appear after a certain period. He also said he later returned to Taree Police Station and told them Hazel still had not come back. No record of such a report was found. In another account, Edward told Christopher that he did not know what had happened to Hazel, but that he had last seen her in Taree. Christopher remembered the details shifting. At one point, Edward spoke about a duffel bag. At another point, he suggested Hazel may have gone to Sydney by train. Edward also told Christopher that he had reported Hazel missing. Then there was the account given by Jeanette Maguire, who later became Edward's second wife. Jeanette told police that Edward said he had driven Hazel into Taree, parked in Victoria Street, and Hazel had run away toward a motel near the bridge. According to her account, Edward said he reported Hazel missing the following day and thought she had run away with someone. She found that strange. If Hazel had simply run away, why report her missing? And in Jeanette's view, Hazel leaving her son and grandson without contact did not fit the woman she knew. The coroner did not choose one version as true. Instead, she recorded the conflict and found Edward's accounts could not be relied upon. That is where the story must stay, unresolved, because the evidence is unresolved. There is one independent record that gives the timeline a sharper edge. An application to dissolve Hazel and Edward's marriage was heard in the Family Court of Australia in Sydney on 29th of May 1980. The divorce became final on 30th of June 1980. Under the law at the time, a divorce order could only be made if the court was satisfied the parties had separated for a continuous period of at least 12 months before the application was filed. The archived documents did not include the filing date or the grounds Edward relied on. But the coroner noted that Edward would have had to tell the family court the separation began before the 29th May 1979 at the latest. The coroner identified two possible lines of thought. The first was that Hazel left Edward of her own free will, did not contact Edward, Christopher, or any known friends or relatives, and Edward waited the required 12 months before applying for divorce. The second was that Edward knew Hazel had died, knew she would not be able to dispute his claim about the separation, and then applied for the divorce. The coroner did not determine which was correct. But she did find that, as of 29th of May 1980, Hazel was not involved in her own divorce proceedings. Around 1980, about a year after the birthday and Christmas cards stopped, Edward went to Christopher's home in Rosewood, Queensland. Christopher was living there with his wife, and Jeanette, who later became Edward's second wife, was often at the house. Christopher remembered Edward arriving with some of Hazel's property. Edward told him he did not know what had happened to Hazel, but had last seen her in Taree. Jeanette remembered Edward asking about Hazel and saying he thought Hazel may have gone to Queensland to live with Christopher. Edward stayed at the house for about a week before returning to New South Wales. After that, he and Jeanette stayed in contact by phone. About a year later, Edward moved into Jeanette's house in Queensland. They married in the early 1980s. Before the marriage, Jeanette spent 4 or 5 months living with Edward at the Putter Road property. By then, she said, the property had a garage-like structure that had been made somewhat habitable. Jeanette later told police about a disturbing conversation at Putter Road. She said Edward made a comment about a body being placed in the bush and consumed by wild pigs, leaving nothing behind. She asked about a skeleton. According to her, Edward said there would be nothing left. The coroner did not treat that as proof of what happened to Hazel, but she did record it. She also recorded Jeanette's view that Hazel's remains were likely at Lansdowne, either in the forest or on the 100-acre block. Jeanette had no hard evidence. Her suspicion was based on what she knew, what she had heard, and what she believed Hazel would not have done. The findings also recorded Jeanette's later description of Edward as troubling. She described him as secretive. She alleged sexual violence within their marriage and said that after they separated in 1986, she suspected Edward was following her. Edward later married again. Another later wife gave a statement to police in 2023 and described behaviour by Edward that the coroner said would now fall within the category of domestic violence. The coronial findings also recorded allegations of inappropriate behaviour towards children. Edward died before investigators could put those allegations to him. That point matters. These allegations are part of the court record, but they were not tested with Edward after the later police investigation began. They cannot be treated as findings of guilt. They form part of the background the coroner considered. For Christopher, the practical search for his mother continued long after the trail had gone cold. In 1983, he made inquiries with births, deaths, and marriages, and received a certificate saying there were no records relating to Hazel. Years passed. Eventually, Christopher's children encouraged him to look again into his mother's disappearance. On the 22nd of July 2021, Christopher went to Queen Beanne Police Station to ask what information existed about the missing person report Edward had always claimed to have made. Police told him there was no record of any such report. A report was formally taken that day. Because of the suspicious circumstances around Hazel's disappearance, Strike Force Karaji was established. Detective Senior Constable Belinda Johnson prepared the brief of evidence for the inquest and gave evidence of the hearing. The coroner said the brevity of the inquest did not reflect the comprehensive investigation that had been conducted. But the investigation faced the problem that defines so many old missing person cases. Time had taken the evidence. Information that might have existed in 1979 was gone. Witnesses had aged. Memories had shifted. Records were incomplete. Edward had died, so police could not put later allegations and inconsistencies to him in the way they might have if the investigation had begun decades earlier. Investigators searched for traces of Hazel under multiple surnames and first names. They checked banking, passport, Centrelink, Medicare, police, court, land registry, and national births, deaths, and marriages records. There was no result that showed Hazel lived on under any of those names.
At the time of the inquest in February 2026, Hazel would have been 103 years old. On the balance of probabilities, the coroner was satisfied she was deceased.
But a finding that a missing person has died is not the same as knowing what happened. The coroner found that Hazel died in 1979 or later. She found that the available evidence did not allow any finding to be made about the place of Hazel's death. Because Hazel had not been found, the court could not determine the cause of death. And because the evidence did not show what happened after the last reliable contact, the court could not determine the manner of death.
The coroner also addressed Edward directly in the findings. She noted the contradictory nature of his accounts and found they could not be relied upon. She noted the serious allegations made against him, including allegations relating to women and children. She noted Jeanette's account of the comment at Putter Road.
At the same time, the coroner also identified one piece of evidence that worked in Edward's favour.
After Hazel disappeared, he travelled to Queensland and asked about her whereabouts. The coroner said it seemed unlikely he would do that if he knew Hazel was dead, while also acknowledging that it could have been part of a broader plan to support his own version of events.
In the end, the court's position was narrow and careful. There were significant suspicions about any role Edward may have played, but the coroner could not determine that Edward ended Hazel's life. The final recommendations were practical. The coroner recommended that the investigation be referred to the Manning Great Lakes Police District and the Missing Persons Registry, so that if Hazel's remains are ever located, they can be identified and her family notified.
That is where the official record ends. A woman born in 1922. A mother who kept sending cards. A 100-acre property at Upper Lansdowne. A husband whose accounts changed. A son who waited years for an answer, then learned the missing person report he believed existed could not be found. Hazel Vidler's case is not a story with a courtroom ending. There is no conviction. There is no confirmed location. There is no official finding of homicide. What remains is the absence. The silence after 1979. The cards that never came again. And a coronial finding, made more than four decades later, that Hazel Claire Vidler is dead, but that the most important questions about her death remain unanswered. For Hazel's family and friends, the public record now says what had long been feared, but it still cannot say enough. That's the story as we know it. In cases like this, the record can contain confirmed facts, disputed claims, and unanswered questions. Where the sources are unclear, we have tried to say so clearly. You'll find the sources for this episode in the show notes. If you found this episode worth listening to, follow the show, leave a rating, or share it with someone who's interested in true crime told with care and respect. I'm Elias Vale. And this has been Crime Path Podcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.